What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum. They've also got mints. It's got natural caffeine balanced with L-theanine and infused with B vitamins. Helps with energy and focus, helps memory recall. I like to use it all the time. Really when I'm, you know, just throughout my days, whenever I need a little pick me up, I feel like I need to be a little bit mentally sharper. If I'm feeling a little tired, I'll just pop a piece and it usually helps me kind of get to where I want to go. I'll chew it during a CrossFit workout, while I'm showing houses, sometimes when I'm training jujitsu. It's really been a nice tool, to kind of add to my life over the last 6 months. And I've really, really enjoyed it. So, get out there and try some NeuroGum.
And on behalf of Captain Beer Co., thank you to the Zach and Pat Show for allowing us to sponsor your program. Because here at Captain Beer Co., you know, the thing that we're trying to do is not just sell you products. We're not just trying to foist upon you something that smells good and not telling you why it smells good or why it works. We make all of our products by hand right here in St. Louis, Missouri. Minimal ingredients, easy to understand. And at least now you can know that you're not going to your local big box store or grocery store where they're going to sell you some high chemical garbage. Like I said, these are products we use ourselves. These are products Zach and Pat use themselves. Why would we sell you something we don't use ourselves? So if you want to support a handmade company right here, St. Louis, Missouri, minimal ingredients you can actually understand, check us out at Captain Beard Co.
It'll make your girlfriend want to kiss you because you smell good.
Yeah. Advertisement soon coming.
Yeah. And also shout out to our friends at Hijime. Hijime is, they actually sent me this awesome shirt, sent us a cool poster too. Hijime is a grappling company based here in St. Louis, Missouri, founded by a team of passionate and experienced jiu-jitsu competitors with a strong, extensive background in judo and wrestling. Hijime means begin in Japanese, symbolizing the beginning of every match and a constant pursuit of mastery. Our store is firmly rooted in the principles of authenticity and dedication, offering a diverse lineup of merchandise that encapsulates the spirit of grappling. Our Patreon is designed to help you in refinement of your own grappling acumen, combining an influence from judo and wrestling to offer a unique, distinct perspective in the world of jiu-jitsu. So get out there, check out Hijime, and shout out to our friends over there for sending us some free stuff.
Sweet.
So, yeah, dude, what's going on?
Oh, same shit, different day. Solving the world's problems, one mortgage at a time.
One real estate transaction at a time.
Absolutely.
That's a great branding statement. I really like that. Solving the world's problems one mortgage at a time.
Yeah.
You should use that.
Okay. All right. There we go.
Clip it up.
Copyright.
And we've definitely been putting out some fires this week, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been interesting. Just handling stuff. It sucks because it takes away from other things, but you know, it's things that you have to get done or these deals don't close. And you know, it's nice to be able to have the backing of our company to trust me and allow me to get things done, and it's awesome. So
yeah, dude. Well, it's, you know, that, and then, you know, we've kind of had some big changes, especially yesterday with all the new real estate forms that have come out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a big shift in our industry. You know, it's been coming down the line for a while now, and now it's officially here. From my understanding, we've got couple more steps to take, you know, as far as, right, you know, things, more forms, more, and it's mostly to do with paying out a buyer's agent commission. So traditionally kind of how it's been done and, you know, really over, you know, the course of time, as long as real estate agents have been in practice, it's typically the seller has been the one that pays the commissions for both the listing agent, meaning the agent that is representing the seller, and the buyer's agent. So the agent that is representing the buyer, both of the commission was paid out of the seller's proceeds. With the big lawsuit, either they're trying to decouple that. But really the biggest, you know, change and, you know, and really here's the thing is these commissions have always been negotiable. You know, I mean, the standard has been kind of that 6% mark, but I mean, I'm sure you talk to any real estate agent, they've probably told you, any person that's listed a house, I'm sure that you'll go out there and they'll tell you they've They've probably taken a listing that's less than six or even more than six sometimes. So it's just, it's always been negotiable, but now they're kind of putting this into practice and into effect, then making sure that people know that they are not they do not have to be responsible for paying that buyer's agent commission. So, you know, that may fall on the buyer. So know that if you're in the market to, you know, buy a house in the near future, know that whoever you're going to work with, a real estate agent, you know, they're going to probably have a conversation with you and going to make you sign a buyer's agency agreement prior to you going out to and looking at houses. And most agents and a lot of agents would require that have required this forever. But now it's just really being put into place so that you as the buyer know that, hey, there might be some houses that we look at that might not be paying out a buyer's agent commission. And basically what this form is going to say that, you know, is that if that seller is not paying a buyer's agent commission, that the buyer is going to be the one responsible for that. And, you know, this is going to be a big change for a lot of people. You know, personally, I have not come across a lot of it yet, of people not paying out buyer's agents commission, but, you know, you never know what's coming down the line. So, you know, it very well could be something that we see a lot more of in the future, and just really what this means is this could make buying houses more expensive for people if they want to use a real estate agent. So,
yeah, I mean, it's really like, do your due diligence, mm-hmm. like research the people that you're going to be working with. And because not all agents, not all lenders, they're not all the same. And, you know, you need to make sure when you're searching for an agent that you are doing your due diligence to find out if they're really worth what it is that they're going to be charging you. Cause sometimes they're not. And I mean, I run across it frequently when I get deals from like past client referrals and they're not working with an agent that I'm used to working with. And you know, I've got my processes in place and you're trying to call them and talk to them and they won't answer their phone. And it's tough, you know, communication is key them being able to answer questions. I just think that the vetting process for clients is going to increase. And I have a feeling that it's going to eliminate a lot of agents, which I think is great. You know, I think there's, you know, I don't know what the numbers are now, but I remember a couple of years ago, there was like something like 8,500 licensed real estate agents in St. Louis.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to allow, I mean, it should help increase the actual service that they're receiving. But at the same time too, I mean, listen, sellers, I mean, you have to be cognizant of this. Like, yeah, you don't have to pay it, but let's think about it. If you're not going to pay it, you're probably going to reduce the number of people that are coming to look at your house.
100%.
Because not everybody has the money for the down payment and closing costs and then commissions on top of it. So if you're one of those houses and that's where you're at and, you know, you're trying to build competition and sell your house for as much as you possibly can, you know, you might need to consider, hey, I'm going to probably need to want to pay the buyer's agent because I'm not going to have these buyers aren't going to be able to pay what they need to.
Right. They're going to be able to afford to buy your house.
So instead of having, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 offers on your house, you might get one.
Right.
And it might be less than, and your house might sit there. And if it's in this market, if it's there for a week, you better believe and someone's going to come in and offer below asking.
Yeah, for sure. And,
I mean, that's just where it's at. I mean, if it's on the market for more than a week, more than one weekend, which is crazy to think about.
I know.
That anything longer than a weekend is
goes to the clearance section, man. Yeah. That's what I call it.
Right.
You know, that, you know, anytime those houses have been sitting on the market, you know, more than like 2 weeks is really, I mean, if you're really wanting that like bidding war, it's going to happen that first weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's been sitting longer than 2 weeks or, you know, week or two, really, and I would expect people to lowball you, you know, because that's what's going to happen. And then if you're looking at it, you're like, oh, well, shit, if I would have decided to pay out an agent, would I have gotten more for my house?
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's no way to know. There's no way to go back in time.
Right. But is there the offer of paying 2.5% to 3% off the sales price? You know, weigh the pros and cons. All right. So, you know, selling a house for $300,000 and you're not going to pay a commission, buyers aren't coming in, you're going to sell. Say you sell it for less than that. You just, you know, or
say you sell it for $290,000.
Right.
Should have paid on a commission, you would have made another grand.
You save 3% on $290,000. Or you pay the commissions and now you got a bidding war, and say someone buys your house for $330,
right?
You know, and you're paying 3%, you know, you're still going to make
come out ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You just gotta, but
yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, we don't want to beat that dead horse this whole time. You know,
it's been talked about enough. Right. Do your research, know what you're getting into.
But we were going to make today another Q&A episode just because we have a lot of those questions banked up. And these are, quite frankly, I mean, this is my favorite. These are my favorites.
This is fun.
I love them. They're just fun. They're just they're easy for us to chat about. And they just always spark some good conversation. So What do you got for us, Pat?
When do you find you're most productive?
On the toilet.
Seriously?
I honestly, dude.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I mean.
Shower, toilet.
Yeah.
Those are two of my places where I get away from, for the most part, screens. I'm just sitting there with my thoughts. I throw my hands back, get comfy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
A great idea comes to me.
Yeah. Just saying,
put it in the idea bowl.
There you go.
I really like late morning after I get a workout in, you know, like it would be like right around, you know, between that, like I usually like to work out around 9 or 10 in the morning. So give me like till like noon after a shower and a meal, and then like, boom, I'm going.
Yeah.
I think that would be the time, you know, and then obviously heavy, heavy doses of caffeine, you know, that has to come along with it. Those productivity and caffeine go hand in hand, in my opinion. But I would say that's when I'm most productive, is in the late morning, early afternoon, post-workout, heavily caffeinated.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
I would say anytime after a hard workout, just because I think I've talked about it before, but for me, working out is not so much physical, but more of a mental challenge test. And getting through that will make the rest of my day easy. And I just, as soon as I get done, I knock out my non-negotiables right after that. Mm. And then it frees me up to do whatever I need to do the rest of the day. And, but yeah, I'm most productive in those first couple hours after a workout, just because I'm riding that high from the workout and feeling great. And I mean, shit, yesterday went and worked out. I didn't shower until the end of the day after the kids were in bed, like 10 o'clock at night.
Just go,
there.
Go, go.
Yeah. Just going, just rolling one thing right after another, after another, after another to get through the day. And, you know, it's funny because I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I need to do some social media stuff. And I'm like, oh, shoot, I got to go shower. I don't have time. Oh, I got to wait to do the social media stuff until I can take a shower. So, yeah, because I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess I could have thrown some dry shampoo in or something, yeah, or just use the straight sweat that was already in there. Yeah. No, that's usually when I'm the most productive.
Yeah.
It's right after workout. So, or getting done, getting my ass kicked in jiu-jitsu. So.
You made it there this week?
I haven't been this week. No, Monday, getting back after that, being gone for most of the week last week with baseball. Monday was pretty hectic. I had a pretty big meeting Monday morning. So
I'm teaching class on Friday morning.
This Friday? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking about, because now that the baseball's done, I can get back into a normal schedule, getting back into the basics. Mm-hmm. Love the fundamentals.
Yeah,
but. I think I need to get back to the basics and get back to learning that stuff and,
for sure.
And mixing the classes, you know, basics and fundamentals and all that. But definitely, yeah,
you're going to go back to basics now. It's going to feel like nothing.
I know. I'm like,
what? Just kind of beat up on everyone who'd stayed there, huh?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, dude. The just gonna be like, oh, I didn't get as, I'm not as sweaty when I leave this I leave this class.
Yeah,
or I'm defeated mentally.
I still have my soul. It hasn't been ripped from my body.
Yeah. By that 140-pound IT kid over there.
Yeah. Just versus Mike's 350-pound body just slowly suffocating me as he puts every pound of his body on top of me.
Into one single point.
Yeah. That crossface is nasty.
Right on the chest.
Just no, it's just 300 pounds of fucking cross,
on your jaw.
CrossFit. Oh, God.
Big boy.
Who was it? Jordan Sanders the other day, the last Saturday class I went to. He threw me in some butterfly sweeps and just, dude, he pressed his forearm straight against my chin. I was like, fuck you, dude. Oh,
yeah. Jordan, he's a
tough guy, though.
Oh, God, he is. He's a good training partner. He's very good.
Yeah.
And he's, that white belt should have an asterisk on it.
Yeah, because, like, decades of wrestling.
Right. And he's not your normal white belt.
Was he the guy that was there the last time I was there that was talking with you, and then the other little white belt, the other little guy, the guy that with the white belt?
Young guy, younger, darker hair. Yeah,
dark hair.
Real tan.
Real bad. No, he's got. Yeah, Jordan's pretty tan.
Jordan Sanders?
Yeah, he's kind of tan. He's got real bad cauliflower ears.
I missed that part. I was too busy focusing on how swollen my arm was. But yeah, I remember he came up and he was, you and him were talking.
I think and, it was him. Yeah.
So
he's very good. He's
got a very good wrestling.
Yeah. Game. He grew up, I mean, he wrestled for like 12 years or something. Like, he is very good at wrestling, and he just came into this, and he's probably only been training about a year, but I mean, he's given, you know, me and all, a lot of the higher belts a lot, you know, it's a hard time. You know, he's not an easy person to deal with.
I think in the Saturday session, I think I saw him tap Bill once or twice. Yeah, and Bill's a purple belt, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And I always say, Jordan, you know, he hasn't got me yet, but he's going to get me one of these days.
Yeah.
Just a matter. But I told him I'm delaying that as long as I can.
We're going to wait till your belt's blue so I don't feel so bad.
Right, right. Yeah, he's taken me down many times. He's very, very difficult to sweep. Because he's got such a good base. That's one thing that you'll find out about, like, really good wrestlers is, like, keeping them on their back. Man, I always say it's like trying to keep a cat in a bathtub. Like, they just bounce, you know, like, the second they touch the mat, like, their back, they just spring off of it. And it's just, like, very hard to hold down. That's one thing because wrestling is, like, one thing that we kind of forget about in jiu-jitsu. And Trevor mixes this into his classes is you're not in jiu-jitsu. We always have a top, kind of designated top player and a bottom player.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play the bottom player, you are basically kind of agreeing to play. Like, I'm going to play bottom. Right. I'm going to try to play jiu-jitsu and I'm going to sweep you. What we don't focus on in jiu-jitsu is holding someone down that doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's always that person that just kind of wants to, they're accepting to play butterfly guard, or they're accepting to play whatever type
open
of guard.
Open guard, close
yeah,
guard.
They're accepting to be there. What we're not used to in jiu-jitsu is that person just deciding to stand up,
mm-hmm.
and, like, holding them down. So, like, that's what something Trevor's mixed into a lot of his classes lately is, like, you know, they do the scenarios where, like, all right, bottom guy, you can win by a sweep or you can win by getting up to your feet. Like, so you have those two options, and bottom guy, you know, top guy, you're trying to pass or submit, or, you know, you're trying to pass, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just adds a whole nother element of, you know, even competition wise, like, if you're a guy that is not confident in your ability to play bottom, like, if I get taken down, I'm not confident in my ability to sweep or submit you from this position, but I do feel better if I get back. I feel more confident in my ability to take you down and end up on top. So there, you know, that person would try to get up and get to their feet again. So it just adds a whole nother element that we don't really think about. And just holding someone down is a skill that, specifically in wrestling, like, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get back to your feet. Mm-hmm. Or you're always trying to get back to your feet, you know, when you're on the bottom. So just kind of one of the big differences. And Jordan is someone he's very hard to keep down, you know, in my opinion. Like, he's very hard to take down, but he's very good at getting up, which is a pain in the ass to deal with.
Yeah.
So, anywho, what's our next question?
What surprised you most when you first started your career?
That it just could be so different, like, person to person. I think we talked about this on this episode, one of the recent episodes with Ryan. That there's just so many different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you don't just, not everybody just,
there's no cookie cutter
answer. Like, there's no, like, you can go to the class and, like, take the class, and that doesn't really teach you shit.
No.
And, you know, you need to find someone out there that's going to kind of mentor you and really show you the way. Like, obviously for me, that person was Alex, and I took a ton of the stuff that he taught me and implemented it pretty much right into my business. But there's a lot of things that I do that's very, very different from him. You know, you got to, like, take the things that you like and, you know, kind of build your own adventure, you know, and, like, kind of build your own career. Like, what do I want? Like, what do I want? I would love business to just kind of come in. You know, right. So how instead of, like, having to do a ton of prospecting, I mean, that's what I was thinking at the beginning. I remember, like, man, this prospecting thing, this sucks. Having to cold call people, having to, you know, constantly be looking for, all right, where's my next deal? How am I going to, you know, if I don't close a deal this month, I'm not going to get paid, right? You know? So it's like, okay, I'm always looking for that next thing. And while at the beginning, I'm just thinking, man, wouldn't it be nice if I just had people come to me versus, like, me always, like, being the one that's reaching out and attempting to get business. So, you know, what I decided to focus on was building relationships and building and like loving on the people that already knew love and trust me. Mm-hmm. And so that was like my, what we call our sphere of influence, you know, like all my friends, all my family. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have been born and raised here in St. Louis, and I know, you know, I have a good network of people between all the years of school and all the people that I knew growing up, between the family and friends, all these things. So it's like, all right, well, I'd rather focus on that and have less, you know, and try to get deals from people that I know. And that if I was like, I always thought, man, if I just do a really, really good job and like be exceptional at this, that, you know, more business will come from that. I will have them refer me their friends, refer me their family, refer me their coworkers. And, you know, so that's really what I focused on at the beginning. And, you know, here I am five years later, and think it's finally, you know, starting to kind of blossom. You know, right. The past 2 years, we've done a lot more marketing, you know, with the social media stuff, which I think really ties into that sphere of influence, because it's constantly dripping on those people. Like I've said, I was talking to this girl yesterday. She's a newer agent. She actually joined Kat's team. I think you went out to lunch with her, Grace. Yeah. We were chatting yesterday on the phone, and I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at my following, I don't have a giant following by any means, but I don't think you need one in our business to have a successful business.
You for sure don't.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I've got like 1700 something followers on Instagram, but I've been able to, you know, build a very pretty decent real estate career out of that. Yeah. And, you know, like, yeah, sure. Would I like more followers? Sure. That'd be cool to like really grow that and build my social media and do all that stuff. But I feel like, I think about this a lot. Am I doing that just because I want the numbers and the credibility and like having this many followers? I think that's what it is, more than like the financial thing that I want from it. Mm-hmm. It definitely is, actually. It's less the financial, like, you know, monetary goal that I will get by having a larger following, but more of like, ooh, I want to see that number be bigger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
Well, I was going to say, think about it like in terms of this, because you're wearing a Real American Freedom hat and we all support Andy's companies, but in terms of like who's going to have the bigger followings, is it going to be the people who work for First Form, or is it going to be the people who work for us too?
First Form.
Why?
Because they're national.
Exactly. Yeah. S2 doesn't, and you can build a really big following and still be an S2 influencer or employee, but it's like, if we run a brick and mortar business, if you run a local to the Midwest or a regional business, then yeah, the numbers can be really good for your ego. But like Alex Hermosi just said about like your subscribers on YouTube, for example, it's just a glamour stat at this point. Like, yeah. And look, I'm kind of guilty of it too, because I'm like, hey, I got to 10,000 followers on Instagram and I stopped trying, which is abundantly true. That's why I started to build up the next page. You can put out really good information anywhere. But like the thing that I would be concerned with if I were you two is like, if I start getting national attention, what is the pro of that? That those people can refer you people that they might know.
Sure. Right. I mean, 100%. Or you can get referred. Like one thing that's nice about real estate agents is I can refer people, you know, I can refer people to real estate agents all over, and I could get a referral fee for that, which is cool. You know, I've done that several times where, you know, for example, I had someone that I sold their house here. They were moving to Arizona. I referred them to an agent that I know in Arizona. She was the one that helped them buy a house. So then I then got a percent of her commission. Like we do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is one way, like financially, sure. If we went like more national, I mean, that would be sweet. But you know, like you said, I think it is more of a glamour thing, man. Like I want to see that number, you know. I would love to, I've got X amount of followers, and it's like, is that really how I should, you know, it's like, why am I doing that?
Well, yeah. I mean, to piggyback off, I mean, we're here local. I mean, we're not selling nationally. Yeah. So
I can only sell houses here in St. Louis.
Right. And so, I mean, I've got
Missouri.
Yeah. I've got Missouri, Illinois, Kansas, Texas, and Florida. But yeah, Guild's a national company, so I can refer out across the country. But I mean, the majority of my business is here in Missouri and just right on the other side of the river in Illinois. So like that's, for me, it's like, I don't think it building a massive following or looking at those numbers, yeah, it's cool to see, but at the same time, it's like, are these people really getting anything out of what mm-hmm. I'm putting out there?
Sure, especially when you're so hyper local,
right? Because everything really that I'm talking about, like, yeah, you can talk about it on a national level, but everything that I'm really talking about when it comes to real estate is local to this area, and it's not going to be the same to everything else.
Sure.
You know, so it's like your videos that you're posting with those hooks and everything, and they're awesome, but it's not something that's just going to blow up nationally, because it doesn't mean anything nationally. It only means something to the people here in St. Louis in the area. So,
right. The people in Idaho don't give a shit about my little two bedroom, one bath in South City that I'm going to be selling this weekend.
Unless they're like, holy shit, that's fucking cheap. I'm going to go buy a rental property.
Sure.
Yeah. But how often does that happen?
Pretty rarely.
Yeah. I mean, we might do what, one, maybe two a year.
Yeah.
From people that are coming from like the coast.
Well, actually right now I got a couple of them, but they're I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I get a lot of people that are wanting to do the Section 8 thing here.
Yeah.
You know, or they're wanting to buy stuff in like North County, North City.
Right. Which makes sense. It's guaranteed money.
It is. Yeah. So just, it's tough sometimes when we have to go up there and.
I mean, and that's the thing though, is like you look at it and St. Louis is still like one of the more affordable states in the country. It's where else, you know, can you find a 2-1 or a 2-2 for like $200,000?
Yeah. Not a lot of places.
No. And so, you know, it's very attractive to those investors coming in and buying those and turning them into rentals. So yeah,
totally.
But
so what surprised you most when you first started?
I mean, I honestly, I just didn't know what the fuck it was. I mean, I just kind of got like, I always knew that my mom worked in real estate and did the financing side of it, but I didn't really know what all it entailed. Like, I didn't realize, like you said, business just doesn't come in. Like, I have to go out and find it. But like the way finding business for me is like, I can go directly to the consumer, but really it's through real estate agents, financial advisors, insurance agents, things like that. Like, I didn't realize like, fuck, I got to go build relationships with these people. So, you know, I just come back from pro ball where you've got some relationship building in there, but at the same time, you're competing with the same guys on the same team to make it to the major leagues. And so you're not like super close with these guys. And there's a lot of times where I was kind of just like a hermit, you know, I was just by myself and I had to learn how to be social again, because I've always kind of been a social person. So I had to relearn that and learn how to talk to agents and talk to financial advisors and things like that to get them to like, know and trust me, to get them to refer me their business. And that was it's very tough in the beginning because, you know, I haven't closed any deals. How the hell am I going to get these people to like, know and trust me? And it was nice that I was on a team that had such a strong history that I could sell the team and the team aspect of it until I was able to build up mine. But it took a long time. I mean, shit, I'm still, but this is a year going, you know, this is my ninth year, you know, and I still want to keep building. I'm still not where I want to be with this. And it's,
well, I don't think you ever will be, man.
No, I don't think so either. And, you know, I can't
imagine one day where you're just like,
I'm fucking.
Yeah, this is good. I'm just going to be good right here.
Right. Well, maybe as you get closer to retirement and you're just kind of coasting and you want to do a handful of deals a month, like, sure. But at the same time, it's like, no, I want to, you know, I want to get to that point where like, if I wanted to step away, I can step away at any time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other things that I've gotten in my life that I would like to do and take over and do things with. And that's what's great about this is, I can do, like, if I can structure my team properly and I can do what I need to do to build this business up and continue to build it, that it does. It allows me free time. I mean, shit. I mean, with what I'm at producing, obviously numbers are down from previous years, but still doing pretty well. I'm able, because of the processes that we have in place and the systems that we have in place, I mean, I don't know any other job or what I do or being able to do it at a high efficiency to where like last week I leave Tuesday night and I'm gone all week coaching my baseball team. Obviously those are busy, hectic days because I'm coaching in the morning and then I'm working the rest of the day. But I mean, I don't know. I'm always used to just working, but yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing, was trying to figure out how to get the business. Like you said, I don't think people realize like that is how hard, like, doing what we do is not hard. Like,
no.
being like actual real estate, like, think about what it is. Like, as a mortgage guy, like, structuring loan, I shouldn't say that. being an okay, like, just low level real estate agent loan officer.
Yeah, it's pretty
easy. Like, what we do.
Open up the doors, show the houses. You like this house? Let's write an offer. What price? You know, it's not that hard. It's when things get hairy. And things get crazy.
To be a top producer.
That's when things really get.
Is way different. And so, but yeah, I mean, and that's what differentiates people. But that was the biggest thing, is like, and I was fortunate. Like I said, fortunate. I went into an office where we had three loan officers that were the top three loan officers in our region for what they produced. So like I'm walking in and I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. I'm going to learn from the very best that do this. And I have no reason not to be successful. I could sit on my ass and not get, but that's not me. So my only option was, fuck, I need to get to their level, or I'm not. And that's the thing, until like, even to this day, because they're still growing and they're producing more and more. And I'm like, I'm still not to that level because I haven't caught up to them yet. Mm. And who knows? It might take them getting out of the business for me to finally get to that point, because they've been doing it for 20, 30 plus years. Here I am, you're nine. And I'm like, yeah. So yeah, tough. It's tough building this business. Like it's what we actually do isn't tough, but like building it is what's tough. And I didn't realize.
Something Sal said actually back when I worked at First Form and the sales coaching team. And this has always stuck with me. He goes, your jobs are not hard.
Right.
Your jobs are demanding. He goes, we don't ask you to do anything complicated. It's just like, come in, be focused on your work. Yeah, we'll ask you to definitely give more to meet us halfway, because what we're offering you is greater than your average 9-to-5 job. It's greater than your average, because we're not trying to just be another place where you clock in and leave. Like, the thing is that for you to be great at what you do, as you eloquently put, it's like the demand of it is, how much do you give? It's hard work plus intention.
Because right.
Anyone could just show up and do, you know, a minimally average job for 40 hours a week. You're not pushing the needle forward.
Right.
To really push the needle forward, the demanding part is like that little extra you give. How do you go? Like when Zach and I closed on my house, for example, he weren't my mortgage loan mm-hmm. officer. Unfortunately, I like the guy we got. He's cool. Not throwing shade his way.
Right.
But it was like the things that were Zach came in with, not even just the bottle of Hennessy. Like I still love that. But it was like the little ring of door alarm and yeah. the cards from there, and always checking in to see to make sure I'm cool. Like we're working on moving me out of my house right now to start renting it out, which is great. And despite for the fact we still work together, like take the podcast and all that shit out of it. If all he had ever been was my real estate agent, I would still be referring you crazy amounts of business just because of how extra you went, the extra demand that you put in on yourself to make sure I had such a great experience. I think that's the difference between your job being hard or demanding. So
just a
little accent to that.
Like, absolutely. We don't have to give closing gifts. We don't have to do all the little extra little things. You don't have to, you know, send the cards, you know, the little follow-ups and all the stuff. It's like, but no, that's what separates you from, you know, just an average real estate agent. That's how I kind of looked at it from the beginning. I was like, all right, what's the, because it's, man.
Like I said, there's 8,500 of you in St. Louis. How do you differentiate yourself?
You can do pretty bare minimum shit, you know, close 10 deals a year and make, you know, 70 grand, you know, like if you really can,
right.
You know, like in, but, or you can fucking bust your ass and, you know, and sell 50.
Or 32 your first year.
Yeah.
During a pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you can, you know, it's just, doesn't take a lot to do. That's why I feel like you see so many half-assed agents.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because it's like you can just kind of coast. You know, you can like, oh, I'm making a decent living.
Right.
You know, or it's like you can make an exceptional living.
Yeah. I mean, I was just on the phone the other night with this loan officer that on the deal that we had that helped me solve this problem. And I mean, her and I were on the phone for like 3 hours talking about all this, but we went on some tangents and talked about some other things. And part of it was just like how the market's working for her and for me and like what she's seeing and where I'm at. And but yeah, I mean, we've got to talk, like, that's the thing is like the average loan officer makes like 60 grand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck that. Like that.
Sounds about right. I mean,
I'm trying to think like how few of deals you'd have to do just to make that much money. And I'm like, fuck. But I also like, I remember back, like, it was funny when I got into this, like, I remember being like, my dad, he was in logistics. He was really high up with U.S. Steel. I want to say general manager of logistics for U.S. Steel, moved him to Pittsburgh. But for a while he was working out of the house, and he was like, yeah, why don't, you know, based on what your interests are, I think you'd really like logistics. And I just laughed. I said, no, I don't want to work the hours that you're working.
Yeah.
And, but that's what was crazy, 'cause my mom was a loan officer, and that was the thing. And it didn't seem like she was working as much as he was working, but that's because he sat in an office in front of a computer all day.
Tethered to that building.
Yeah. And with this, you're not, like,
That's my favorite. That's like one of my favorite parts about it is you're kind of like running and gunning. Like, I mean, I always make the joke that my truck's my office.
Right.
You know?
It's like, well, that's the thing is like my computer is with me everywhere.
Right. It's like I've got, as long as I got Wi-Fi, long as I've got, you know, data signal and I can hotspot to my phone, I can work anywhere.
Right. And that's what's awesome about this job is the flexibility that comes with it. But it was funny because it's like another thing I didn't realize was like, you're on call 24/7. You know, you set some boundaries. Obviously, you're not going to respond after certain periods of time. But like,
I'm getting way better at that, by the way.
But I mean, ultimately, you know, you're, as a loan officer, I am relied upon to get this to the table, get this to the closing table, and give them the money to buy this. And I have to be able to do that every day of the week. Mm-hmm. Like, real estate doesn't sleep. So obviously now, like, COVID changed some things where, you know, listings show out is coming soon, starting on Thursday or Friday, so people can plan ahead. And so it's not as rushed as it used to be, but even still, like, I'll have clients, hey, this house, you know, we didn't see it before, but we just came across it. Can you run me some numbers? And, you know, on a Sunday night, you know, so they can get an offer in. Like, yeah, that shit happens. Like, I wasn't aware of that back when my mom was doing this. But I was very cognizant of my dad, that he was working 14, 15 hours a day. And my mom was probably doing
in
the
office.
Yeah, yeah. My mom was probably doing the same thing, but it just wasn't visible. But ultimately, that was another thing that I wasn't aware of when I started this was that, hey, if I want to be good and I want to be successful, I have to be ready any day of the week at any time.
Yeah.
So
always on, baby.
Always, always running to marry people. You still got to knock them pre-approvals out.
Yeah. Our next one.
If you could give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would you say?
Get your tags fucking changed if you're going to roll around with drugs, bro. Holy shit. Sorry. I might cut that out.
Man, when I was 18, I had no idea what I was going to be or what I was going to do. Mm. I had no aspirations of, I just knew I was like, oh, I just want to be successful. I just want to have a lot of money and be able to do what I want and this and that. I had no idea that like real estate was what I was going to like, what I was going to end up doing or like, here's the thing is I would say like, go get your real estate license at 18 and start that. But I'm like, man, I don't know if I would have had a lot of these.
Had the mental capacity and desire.
I don't think so.
Wouldn't have had the urgency to do it either, dude.
Fuck no. And I would have, I mean, I look back at all the experiences that I had basically from like 22 to like 26. And I felt like that was a time in my life where I developed a ton, you know, like I left college, went into starting the restaurant. You know, really, you know, we kind of built that from the ground up. That was a huge, huge, like growing moment for me. I learned a ton. I learned, you know, a lot about business and I had, you know, learned really what it meant to work hard. You know, I feel like that was around the time that I really got into like the personal development, like the reading, all of that stuff. You know, like that's really when I started like listening to podcasts and like getting into things other than just like straight entertainment and like spending my time trying to like better myself and make myself smarter and like trying to figure out really, I think it was like me kind of searching what I really wanted to like subconsciously. Cause I remember like listening to real estate stuff and reading books and, you know, like Bigger Pocket stuff and stuff like that. I feel like that kind of like really set the groundwork. And then whenever, you know, I ultimately like left the restaurant, you know, and then, you know, kind of was lost for a couple months. You know, I didn't really know what I was going to do. I don't know if I talked about it on here, but I went and worked at when I left the restaurant, I was kind of like in no man's land for about 8 or 9 months. And I went and worked at an electric company here in town thinking like, oh, maybe I'll be an electrician. And just because I had, you know, we did the construction for the restaurant and I spent like a year doing that prior to it building up. And I really like kind of like that aspect of it. I had flipped my first house in that time and I was like, oh, maybe I like this kind of like construction side of things. But then I talked to, you know, all the older guys, you know, in the company that were in their 40s and 50s and, you know, they just didn't really seem like they loved what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately I was like, okay, well, I have the insight to see, I just had the vision. I was like, okay, well, that's kind of where this goes in like 20 years. So I want to do this. Like, that's what it turns into. It's like, okay, well, they don't seem very happy. And then, you know, grandma talked me into real estate, you know, and then, you know, here we are, you know, 5 years later or well, something like that.
Yeah.
Something, you know, like 6 years later now. But anyway, yeah, I would just say the advice I guess I'd give to myself would be, wish I would have started jujitsu earlier.
Yeah.
So that might be something. I'd probably be a black belt by now. If I started at 18, and I'd be way better at it. But I would say just maybe getting into like the personal development stuff earlier than I did, and like caring about that and actually paying attention to like my health and fitness as much as I, you know, I used to work out then, but I don't, not to the extent or the knowledge or the, you know, the stuff that I do now. So maybe if I would have done that, that would have kind of improved other areas of my life, maybe.
Yeah.
That's what I guess I'll say. What about you?
Thinking back to 18, you know, at that point, you know, I got my college scholarship, you know, this point trying to figure out, you know, pro ball wise, you know, but ultimately my goal was to play professional baseball, make it to the major leagues. So that was where my mind was. So if I were to go back and talk with changing nothing with where I'm at right now, I would go back and just tell my 18-year-old self, like, hey, everything's going to be okay. Even when things fall apart and don't work out, everything's going to be okay. You're going to figure it out. Kind of like what Ryan said, figure it out. It's like, you're going to figure, you'll figure it out. But to go back in, any advice I would give is, I mean, you're right with the self-help, but ultimately, like, my mindset at 18 and where I was, I mean, I was very dedicated to baseball. And then when I got into college, you know, I kind of took that and wanted to enjoy college and do things. And I was drinking and partying and doing those things that I kind of neglected while I was in high school because I was so focused on baseball. So I would go back and tell myself, like, hey, remember what your focus was while you were in high school. Those parties, that drinking, all that stuff is a distraction from what you want. And if that's what you truly want, you need to stick to that. And I think I lost that. And who knows if I would have just kept that same mental structure and structure to my life that I had while I was in high school through college, who knows what would have happened, how much better at baseball I would have been. But at the end of the day, I love where I'm at right now. I love the kids that I have. I love the life that I have and I've created. And so I would ultimately just say, hey, continue to do what you need to do to get better every single day. Continue to move forward with everything and just know that no matter what life throws at you, you're equipped to get through it. It's going to suck, but just know that if you continue to get better every single day and push forward, you're going to be just fine. So, I mean, that's what I would go back and tell myself. I don't know if it's advice, but it would just be more of like a mental prep for the shit storm that has just been the last, I'm 36 now, so 18 years of my life, from college to pro ball to getting into this to getting married and kids and divorced and then the markets and everything. Just, you are equipped to handle anything that's thrown at you. Just stay positive on yourself and just know that everything's gonna be okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys. Well, like I said, these Q&A episodes are, you know, kind of becoming some of our favorite ways to do these duet episodes, as we refer to them as. So be on the lookout for when we put the question boxes up on our Instagrams. Please feel free to throw a question in there. You know, we'd love that, just because these are fun for us to do, and you know, we'd love to shout you out on the show. So
especially some of you younger guys that may be listening to this fresh out of college, like, reach out with advice or like ask for advice or ask for things, because we're not far from where you were, but with what we've been through and where we've come from, we're leaps and bounds ahead of where you're starting out at. So come to us, ask us for advice. We're here to help.
Yeah, absolutely. So make sure, if you're not subscribed yet, please click that subscribe button for us. That totally helps us out. Also hit that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.